Morty, come on. Come on, get in the ship, Morty. We gotta go.
What is it this time?
We're gonna do targeted harassment. Targeted harassment of women and POC, Morty.
That doesn't seem right, Rick.
I don't care, Morty. I want free healthcare. I want those idiots in the government to pay for my healthcare, Morty. We're gonna go door to door. We're gonna make them vote for communists, Morty. We're gonna knock on their door and make them vote for communists.
Is this some weird alien neighborhood or some other universe where the doors are time portals or something? I'm getting sick of all these crazy adventures, Rick.
No, Morty. This isn't a normal human neighborhood. In this universe. Come on, enough questions, Morty.
I don't know, Rick.
Come on, get in the ship. I'm gonna get free healthcare. I'm Bernie Bro Rick!
That was the official Rick and Morty.
Endorsement of Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. We got a hold of them and we asked them to come and get involved with the show, and they were only too happy to do so. And yeah, that's what we got from them.
All right, so welcome to Neighbor Science. This is our 7th episode. We're just going to do something kind of casual this time. It's not going to be really research heavy like our last 3, which were quite a project. Sorry it took us so long. I got really tired of editing, and then we had some some goofs with syncing the project files and everything like that. But yeah, now we're back.
We're back. Yeah, welcome back to Neighbor Science. And like Ryan says, we're going to keep things nice and chill this time around. We're just going to chat about a few interesting and fun topics and stay away from the serious stuff. We'll get back into more serious stuff in the next few episodes. But for today, let's keep it simple.
All right, you want to start us off with the Star Wars trailer thing?
Yeah. Okay, so I've been thinking about doing this recurring bit in our podcast where I give you a geekly roundup of everything nerdage that I can get my hands on. And as anyone who is nicely involved in the geek world is aware, we've just had the new Star Wars trailer, The Last Jedi. It's looking really good, and lots of deep feels coming out of this new trailer. And the one big unexpected thing to come out of this trailer, and it's huge for anyone who's followed Star Wars. It's bigger than how bad the prequel trilogy was. It's bigger than how much people hate Jar Jar Binks. Porgs have broken the internet.
Is that the little rabbit thing?
That's the it's a little hamster kind of Pikachu looking. I don't know. Literally in a trailer that went just under 3 minutes, the one that I saw, the porg gets, I think, about a second of screen time. And based on that 1 second, it's like the whole internet just imploded. The porg is like what?
Is it just
George
like
a... Lucas would?
Go ahead.
What George Lucas wanted the Ewoks to be, and then later what I think he wanted Jar Jar Binks to be.
So it's going to defeat the Empire?
I think it might defeat everything. Yeah, whatever it is right now. They've created the ultimate cash cow. Disney stepped up their game and basically showed George Lucas how to create a character that you can commoditize because it is the most adorable thing in the world.
That's actually...
Yeah, it's disgustingly cute. I'm a little bit mortified with myself for liking it as much as I do. If you haven't seen it yet, go check out the new Star Wars The Last Jedi trailer, even if you don't like Star Wars, just so that you can catch that 1 second so that you have the reference that everyone is throwing out. I mean, it's insane. If you Google porg memes, They have literally taken over, like, I think about a quarter of the internet is now just Porg memes.
Porn and Porg.
Porn and Porg. Yeah. So that's that side of things. Then also, for anyone who knows me, I'm a big geek. I like my superheroes. I like my comic books. I like pretty much anything that falls under traditional geekage. And so I was quite excited for the latest season of The Flash. Season 4 has just come out, and I was not disappointed at all, because what I expect from my Flash is for really bad science. and the spoiler alert for those... Well, I suppose not really a spoiler. The new villains for season 4 turn out to be two South Africans that I grew up watching on television.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's... Yeah, very cool. I was thoroughly impressed. And then I found out that the lady that is playing the machinist, the villain, her name is Kim Engelbrecht, and she is what South Africans would call colored, and she's really, really pretty, and I grew up watching this girl play various characters on South African TV, and I was very excited to see her crossover from the traditional South African soapy to Canadian superhero teen soapies. Yeah.
Is that a South African word for soap opera, I'm guessing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 okay. Sorry.
I've never heard soapy. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's what we... I suppose everyone got tired of calling them soap operas in South Africa because we had several soap operas that ran for years and years and years. I know Days of Our Lives just got pulled off the air last year there.
I just found out General Hospital is still on. That's insane to me.
And fortunately, I think we never got that one.
Okay.
Our big ones from internationally were... Days of Our Lives, uh-huh. Bold and the Beautiful.
Okay.
Dynasty. And there were Dynasty was around for a while.
That's coming
but it
back.
Never really. No.
It's coming back. No. Yeah.
Oh God. Why? Why do they torture us? So?
I don't know.
Yeah, and obviously Dallas back in the day was pretty good.
I've never heard of that one.
You've never heard of Dallas?
No. I mean, honestly, I've never watched, like, other than The Flash, which I guess would be kind of a soap opera. It's like a Marvel soap opera. I haven't really watched any soap operas.
Oh, neither do I, but, okay. Like, you can't live, you can't really live in South African society without hearing someone talk about some of the soap operas some of the time.
Okay.
And also, South African television... has gone through this phase since 1994 where they've introduced a whole bunch of soap operas because it's a means for them to have recurring shows that give lots of work to South African actors. And the shows there range from Isidingo, which is probably one of the higher quality ones, to the Afrikaans ones like Seven Delan. There's several of the Zulu, Sotho, and Xhosa soapies that happen, and it's actually a pretty big industry.
Hmm.
So it's nice to see some of the actors from that world making their way into the more mainstream stuff internationally. Obviously, Canadian and American TV shows, and The reason I was a little bit later than you in jumping online today is I was watching... I finally got around to watching The Dark Tower. I don't know if you ever...
the Stephen King thing?
Read any... Yeah, okay. The Dark Tower.
The movie version?
The movie version with Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey. And I was very surprised that they another South African soap opera actor... was actually in the Dark Tower series.
Oh, nice.
And in the Dark Tower movie. So yeah, that was a nice little revelation.
Yeah, I didn't know that was out. I also was like, how are you seeing a movie that early? And I always forget that it's like 2 o'clock there for you. So
Yeah. So I'm just very quickly going to touch on this. The Dark Tower movie, I have read plenty of reviews. It came out very late here in Bahrain. And when I say very late, I mean it was released internationally like 2 months ago or something. And I wanted to go watch it and was going to be released. But then we checked the cinemas and they delayed it and delayed it and delayed it. And then they cancelled it altogether. So I've had to wait to buy a copy of the movie. And yeah. So I finally got around to watching it. And as a fan of the books, I can understand why a lot of fans have looked at the movie and said, "This is crap, it's terrible, they've ruined my childhood." You know how geeks tend to overreact.
Yeah.
But as a standalone movie, if you've never heard of the Dark Tower series, you've never read the books or anything like that, it isn't terrible. It's actually not a bad story. I do think that they tried to squeeze a bit too much into it. I mean, it is like, I think it's like a 10-book series.
Did they try to fit all the books into one movie?
Yeah!
Oh, and that, okay.
Yeah.
I thought they were trying to make it a series. That's what it seemed like to me. But I also have never read the books, so I don't know anything about the plot and couldn't actually discern that myself.
Yeah, from what I could tell, because, I mean, wait, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 books in the series itself. Okay, the last of which was only released in 2012. Then there's a prequel comic series, there's other tie-in books, there's this entire universe that's grown out of the Dark Tower series. And for them to squeeze all of it into a single movie that isn't, like, it was an hour and a half long. And they were never going to be able to do it justice.
Yeah, but even Blade Runner produced, was 3 hours long.
Yeah, it seemed. And I have to admit, I used to, growing up, I hated these long, epic 3 hour movies. But with the direction Hollywood seems to be going in, I'm starting to get the feeling that the only way that you can really do a movie justice is in 3 hours.
Yeah, I mean, you can also do the, like, the Hobbit thing and do, like, 3 movies.
9 hours of one story.
Wait, were those each 3 hours long?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. See, I thought that, I mean, I only watched, like, the first one, and I don't really remember it, but I thought it was, like, each one was, like, normal feature length, like, hour and 30, hour and 45. Which seems like you could fit a decent story in that amount of time if you have 3 fucking movies to do it.
So, yeah, I just wanted to quickly touch on that.
Did you...
I haven't seen it.
Okay, you haven't seen Blade Runner?
I have not.
Okay.
So I'm going to leave this one to you.
Okay. So the summary is, it's good. you know, I thought... Like, I watched the original again... last week, like early last week, because Diane had not seen it. Like I tried to show it to her before and we both fell asleep. And so we rewatched it on Tuesday. It was the, not the director's cut and not the theatrical cut, but the final cut. It's like Evangelion. There's like 5 different versions of the movie. I used to really like that movie, and after rewatching it, it's like kind of boring and not great. Like the really good part about it is the aesthetic and like the setting.
Yeah, I have to say, having watched the original, I don't know which version I watched. The only thing that really impressed me with it was that it was done so long ago, and yet. The
special effects look really good. Yeah.
Yeah, they were pretty decent, man. It's like you don't sit there feeling like you're watching a 70s, 80s sci-fi movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you can see, like, if you watch a lot of sci-fi, especially dystopian movies now, you can see the inspiration from Blade Runner in a lot of those, but a lot of them are much better than the original Blade Runner. And so the new Blade Runner movie is much better than the original in a lot of ways. You know, it takes the aesthetic and the setting. It improves on it because it has modern special effects to use. And I think Denis Villeneuve is a much better director. A lot of people shit on Arrival for some reason. I've heard that a lot from people, that it was bad, but then when I ask them why was it bad, they can never actually give a reason. So I think they're just being contrarian, but I thought Arrival was really good. He directed that as well.
Arrival. I thought you were saying The Rival.
No. Arrival.
Like, I haven't seen it. I thought Arrival was fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. He's the director for Blade Runner. I thought every shot in the movie was like a piece of art. Like, the lighting was great. Like, there was, it seemed like there was a lot of really conscious choices made about what color to make everything, what angles to use. Much more so than a lot of other movies that come out today. It was a really long movie, but I would have been cool with it being even longer.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
The story was three hours?
Yeah, it was about 3 hours. The story was so much better than the original, because the original story is just like, replicants escaped, you have to kill them, but it takes like so fucking long to even get to the point where he's even interacting with the replicants. The story in this one, I won't spoil too much, but basically there's like a major change in how replicants are able to function. And so Ryan Gosling is trying to investigate that. For me, one of the coolest sci-fi parts of it was Joy, the holographic wife. So Ryan Gosling has like this hologram that he's like married to, basically. And he's
married to a hologram.
Yeah. He's like sickly in love with her. Like, he treats it as a real relationship, which, you know, in one sense it's kind of depressing, but in another it's kind of interesting because it raises the question of how valid or real the attachment is between, like, you know, an AI-driven hologram and a person, or in this case, a replicant. So it's like, you know, another level of interesting. And some of my friends, when we watched the movie, I brought up how interesting that was to me, and they mentioned Her, that movie with Joaquin Phoenix, which I haven't seen and I have no real intention to see. Don't at me. I'm not gonna change my mind on it. The difference, though, is that in Her, which I only know about through the Wikipedia synopsis, again, don't at me. it's like an AI that's developed over time into a companion, whereas Joy is actually like a mass-produced AI specifically designed to be a romantic companion, which kind of makes the basis for the relationship like a lot emptier. And I also thought it was interesting that they made her a hologram instead of like a fuckbot, you know, because why wouldn't the technology for that exist? But yet they chose to make it a hologram anyway, which, I don't know.
I think
it's a cool
aspect. It sounds to me like there's, like, if I were to watch the movie, I would find some symbolic meaning in that.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil any more, so there's more to that. But I'll wait for you to see it before we talk about it. Let's move on to Elon Musk. Okay, sure.
I just want to check one thing. The original Blade Runner movie, the whole real core question, for me, I always boil a good movie. Obviously, shitty movies don't do this. But a good movie always has a core question.
Mm-hmm.
And that core question is what, and the subjective answers to that question are what drives the interest in the story. So the core question of the original Blade Runner movie was, where is the line between human sentience and artificial sentience when we're talking from an ethics perspective, when we're talking from, like, where is the actual line between natural and artificial when it comes to sentient beings? And the one thing that got lost in the various remakes is that the answer to that question comes at the very end when we see Harrison Ford, and the question becomes, is he or is he not a replicant?
Right.
And depending on which version of the movie you're watching, which cut, that answer changes. So the big question for me is, does the new Blade Runner movie, does it continue that question? Does it delve more deeply into the question of where is that line? Does it blur the line?
No, not really. It kind of just makes the answer explicit, which is a complaint that some people had with it, okay. Which is that they pretty much explicitly say, like, yes, Harrison Ford is a replicant. So, that was one of the complaints that I saw about the movie, was like, oh, it makes the subtext into text. And it's like, well, okay, but there's other subtext to it that is added. I don't know. I thought it was good. I recommend anyone seeing it if you like
okay.
sci-fi.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch it now. So, well, not right now. Right now, I'm going to move
no,
on to talk about
no, get the fuck out of here and go see the movie. We're done recording. We're done.
Okay. So yeah, so, Elon Musk.
Yep, your compatriot.
Everyone who has ever listened to our show knows how deeply in love we are with Elon Musk. He's just so dreamy, and
he's got really nice thick hair, natural thick hair. So
he's got that strong jawline.
Yeah, it's sexy.
Magically changed over the years.
So apparently he was treated as a historical figure on Star Trek. I haven't been watching Star Trek, so I don't know about this.
So there's a scene in the latest episode of Star Trek where the captain is trying to convince the head science officer to do something that they're developing a new kind of traveling technology. In the series, they're at war with the Klingons, and this will be a massive game changer in the war. I won't give away too many spoilers for those of you who haven't seen it yet. But the Star Trek Discovery, the ship, is still trying to figure out this technology, so they're not 100% sure if it'll work and how it's going to work. And the captain is essentially asking the science officer to do something that might not be safe. And when the science officer threatens to leave the ship and take his experiments with him and everything, and that all the tech on the ship is based around his experiments, the captain says to him, do you want to be remembered as the guy who cost us the war, or do you want to be remembered with the likes of the Wright brothers, Elon Musk, and the guy that invented faster-than-light travel? So, I couldn't help but feel like, look, obviously Elon Musk is sitting there going, yeah, they're talking about me, y'all.
That's right.
That's right. It's me they're talking about, because I am Iron Man. But
I mean, he's way more important than the Wright brothers, so let's be honest.
Is he? Is he really?
Yeah, he invented the Hyperloop. He's gonna. That other guy, he didn't invent faster than light travel. That's going to be Elon Musk.
So, just since you mentioned it, the Hyperloop that Musk developed that has done almost nothing and that isn't really making any progress is finally going to make some progress because another big capitalist has stepped in, and one we're all very familiar with, and actually one of Musk's competitors in the space race. And that's Richard Branson.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear about this one.
Yeah, so he's in... let me just double check. I need to pull up the story again. I don't remember all the details from it.
Okay, well, while you're looking for that, I'll talk about another related story. The Wall Street Journal has called out Elon Musk for potentially misleading investors because basically Tesla is not living up to its promises. They had only produced only 20% of the number of cars they promised, and some of their other progress is just not going so well. So the Wall Street Journal wrote a pretty scathing article saying, you know, it's one thing to be ambitious, but it's another to actually mislead investors. So Elon might be finding himself in some hot water soon.
Yeehaw!
Did you find the Branson thing?
I did. So basically, Richard Branson has stepped in because he's already a train owner, and he says, as a train owner, I feel it is something that I want to be able to operate. And he's talking about the Hyperloop, saying that at the moment our trains are. He says, at the moment our trains are limited to 125 miles an hour. There are customers, for instance, that would love to go from London to Edinburgh in roughly 45 minutes, and that will be possible with the Hyperloop.
That's insane.
Yeah, Hyperloop 1, last month they announced that they had raised an additional $85 million in financing, which brings its total haul to, I think it's like $245 million now. And that would probably put their valuation at around $700 million if I... Because I try to keep up to date on these things, but I can't always remember all the figures.
So I've made that trip from London to Edinburgh on the Virgin train. And yeah, it's insane to want to do it in 45 minutes. I mean, it's not that long of a trip. It's like a few hours. We left, you know, got a meal, read some books, and got there by, you know, 3 o'clock. I think we left at like 9 a.m. Got there around 3 o'clock.
So it's not that
long. Yeah, it's not that long of a trip. You know, if you're traveling, do you really? I don't know. First of all, it's only going to be.
It's the English countryside.
Yeah, it's a beautiful trip.
Why wouldn't you want? Exactly. Why wouldn't you want to see that in all its glorious details?
And I just don't see something like the Hyperloop being affordable to anyone but rich business assholes. And, you know, we don't need business to happen any faster. It's fine. We need business to happen slower.
Indeed. Anyone who listened to our energy podcast will know why we want that. And if you haven't listened to it, then press pause and go listen to it now. And you're back. So, Richard Branson hasn't actually said how much his investment is in the Hyperloop, but if he takes over, at least we know that while you're traveling on the Hyperloop, you might have some decent music to listen to.
And weed, man.
And weed. Okay, yeah, so another story by about Elon Musk. You tell us. What did the GM CEO say?
Yeah, so apparently Elon Musk has been claiming that Tesla cars can achieve level 5 automation, which basically means fully automated driving instead of, automated driving with some input from the driver. And so far he only has cameras and radar for the Tesla self-driving functions. And the GM CEO basically said, like, you're insane and full of shit if you're claiming that you can do that. It's physically impossible to get level 5 automation with only cameras and radar. So he basically just did a very public call out of him saying, like, and actually, I don't know if, was it the CEO or was it the guy in charge of the automation project? I can't remember. I think it might have been the guy in charge of the automation project, because he was like, I have the credentials to know what I'm talking about here, and you're making stuff up if you're saying that you can do this. Anyway, Yeah, so that's the Elon Musk news. Maybe we should move on to the next section.
One last thing. This has just popped up on my news feed. So Elon Musk's response to the whole... the Wall Street Journal thing about how slowly the Tesla Model 3 vehicles are being assembled is he unveiled a video of the KUKA industrial robots at work building the Model 3. The video has been slowed down to 1/10 speed in order to show you, and obviously this is... That's clever PR! I'll give the man that much. He is good at PR.
Yeah, I mean, the big reason that they cited was that major sections of the car had to be built by hand.
Yeah, because lots of... to get that metal paneling, you have to shape that by hand, yeah?
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, I didn't read too much into it. Anyway, let's move on to the next bit. We talk about Elon Musk a lot, and we've spent quite a bit of time on him. All right, okay. So the next section, we're just going to go over some news headlines and give some quick takes on them. So the first one... Over a dozen wildfires are happening in Northern California. At least 15 are dead. I think since then this number's been up to about 25. And 20,000 people have been evacuated. My take, all fire is bad. The official position of Neighbor Science is that we are against fire of any kind. However, the victims live in a place that burns constantly, and so they deserve it. Peter?
The only thing I've got to add to that is that I saw a report this morning saying that it is the worst levels of air pollution ever to be registered in California.
Okay. So next, a report on the worst, traffic places in the country has named Washington, D.C. the number one, worst area for traffic in the U.S., with the I-95 corridor between the 495 Beltway and Fredericksburg costing an estimated $2.3 billion in lost time and gas over the next 10 years. My take is they are grossly underestimating how much worse this is going to get. I drive that corridor all the time. It's terrible, especially on weekends when everyone's trying to go to the beach. So there's traffic all the time, not just during rush hour. And... another interesting tidbit, DC occupies 3 of the top 10 spots on that list.
Fantastic. My take, start investing now in the Lilium electric flying car.
we're trying to build up the train infrastructure around here. The candidate that I'm canvassing for, Lee Carter, he's actually, that's one of his major policy points is he wants to expand the VRE, the Virginia Rail Express, and some other commuter rails in order to reduce the amount of traffic around here.
Sounds like a good idea. I like mass public transport. Mm-hmm. And trains are cool, man.
Yeah.
I like trains. I've just sent you a link on Facebook if you want to just open that up just very quickly and take a quick look at that so that you can see what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, I saw that thing. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
It's really freaking cool. It's all electric motors, and I think it's not feasible yet, but if they can make that work, that would be really awesome, and I would like one. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
Yeah, so when we start the Patreon, our first Patreon goal will be to get a flying taxi.
Yeah. Myself and Ryan need to meet up for meetings regarding the podcast. At the moment, we've been doing everything via Skype. And as anyone who has dealt with Skype knows, there's slight audio issues. And we'd like to forego those by meeting in person and recording each other with old school tape cassettes.
Yeah. So, you know, it's probably like $6,000, something like that.
Come on, guys, yeah. You can Patreon the shit out of us.
That'll probably cover it. All right, so next headline. Everyone's heard of this. The co-founder of Miramax, Harvey Weinstein, has been accused of numerous instances of sexual assault and has been fired from Miramax. And since I wrote the show notes, a number of other people have had accusations against him, notably Ben Affleck, who, yeah, people have said that he has groped a lot of girls at parties, which, you know, basically my take on this is...
Doesn't surprise me in the least.
Yeah, basically my take on this is we should assume all powerful people are rapists, because they basically all are. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and if they can't do it sexually, then they're going to do it in other ways. I was actually, myself and my wife were having a long talk about this last night, and the one thing we both agree on is that everyone that is now coming forward to talk about Weinstein and about everyone else that's now being accused, they're all big-ass fucking hypocrites, because they've all known about this shit going on for decades, and no one said shit.
Well,
they've all
a lot of people
stood back and said, well...
A lot of people have actually brought it up, like, numerous times. I think there was an article about it, like, over a decade ago. The problem is that, you know, he's a powerful person and has a lot of money and influence in the film industry, and so he can silence anyone who actually brings anything up. There was another article I read yesterday about Louis C.K. Having many accusations of sexual misconduct against him that were
really?
That all basically went away. Yeah, he's been accused of, like, basically cornering women and then, like, beating off in front of them and, like, making them watch and stuff. And so the article was about
Louis C.K. Oh
yeah.
My god, that's a bit mind-blowing.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not mind-blowing to me. I'm not surprised. Honestly, so the article was from it was about Just for Laughs and how the woman was asking other comedians on the red carpet, like, how do you feel about the allegations against Bill Cosby? And they're all like, oh, it's disgusting. Like, Bill Cosby's a terrible person. And then it's like, how do you feel about the multiple allegations against Louis C.K.? And they're just like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then they, like, walk away. And, someone who was, like, the COO of Just for Laughs, like, came over and basically yelled at her and said, like, yeah, you can't say that to anyone, blah, blah, blah. Like, you have to leave. And so she just, like, left, basically. And
that sucks.
She said a lot of people support her in private, but they're not willing to go public and risk any damage to their career. So there's a lot of aspects of this where...
this is exactly it. Is what we were busy saying is a lot of people went ahead and put their careers ahead of what would amount to justice.
Right.
Yes, it's difficult, but if this is such a common problem, if this is something that's been going on for so long, then we're not talking about 5 or 10 people that it's happened to. We're talking about hundreds, if not thousands, of both men and women, as we can see through the Terry Crews thing, that it's a rapist culture kind of thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, look, I'm not saying that they have condoned it, but through inaction, they have allowed it. I'm not going to claim that I'm better than any of these people, but were I put in a situation where I had to choose between my career and my dignity as a human being able to look myself in the mirror on a daily basis because I knew about someone getting raped and I shut up about it so as to save my job, yeah, that's not really a question, man. It really isn't. I've done so many different jobs in my life. Getting a new career isn't that big a deal. Restarting your life after having been raped, I'm going to guess, is just a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like, look, some people spoke out. I know Seth MacFarlane at an awards ceremony a while back, he kind of pointed out to the audience, oh, look, now women no longer have to pretend that they like Weinstein in order to get a job. And He's now saying that he made the dig at him back then because he was aware of it. A friend of his, through one of when he was doing Ted, one of the Ted movies, one of his friends had told him about how she'd been sexually harassed by him, and how her career was basically cut short because of him. So basically, all these people have known about this shit going on for years. And I get that the rich and powerful are able to make things go away, but there's only so much they can do if people band together, stand together. And I can't help but feel like there's a lot of people that have been very hypocritical about this whole thing. So,
the biggest hypocrites are people like Ben Affleck who speak out about it. But they're guilty of it themselves. But I think the problem here is structural in the first place. I mean, Miramax is a production company. Production companies wouldn't really need to exist were it not for the capitalistic structure of Hollywood. You know, if someone's life wasn't destroyed by, you know, not sucking up to production company in one way or another, it doesn't have to be sexual. You know, it can also just be like, you know, making a movie that you don't really believe in order to make a bunch of money. Then, you know, obviously the film industry would significantly improve.
Agreed.
So I think if you were against this kind of rape culture that's in the film industry and in a lot of other industries as well, then you should be anti-capitalist. You should be anarchist. You should want there to be, a reshaping of industry where people can't abuse power like this in order to force people to give them sexual favors or, worse, make shitty movies.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the next item.
That was depressing, so let's move on to something a little bit less depressing, but still quite serious, and that's Catalonian independence.
Yeah, so Catalonia voted in a referendum to declare independence from Spain.
Yeah.
My take on this.
The Madrid government has basically said that it is an illegal referendum and they're not accepting it, and the Catalonians are saying, you're gonna have to, because we want out.
Yeah, they were sending fashy cops into the voting booths to, you know, punch people and drag them out and stuff. My take, I support this democratic decision completely, unless it's for right-wing reasons, in which case...
In which case, you don't. So, my take is, it's very interesting if you go and look at the actual statistics, the tax stuff in Spain. Catalonia is one of the biggest providers of tax revenue for the Spanish government. That like they provide like a quarter of all the taxes in Spain, as opposed to an area like Andalusia, which provides almost nothing but takes quite a bit of the tax revenue. So I'm not so sure that Spain actually gives a shit about Catalonia, the Catalan people, and what they really want, or I don't think any of that really matters. I think the big thing for them here is that they are nervous about what's going to happen to their economy if they lose out on 25% of their current tax revenue. Especially since Catalonia itself wasn't that big a burden on the tax income. Their infrastructure was decent. They looked after themselves for the most part. They didn't rely on the national government for anything. So they were good. They don't need the rest of Spain. So part of me really hopes that they manage to get their thing just to see how it all plays out. But
yeah, I'm really interested to see like how they organize themselves if they do actually separate. Like, will they be part of the Eurozone? Or will they be a separate entity?
See,
if they're not part of the Eurozone, then they could create a sovereign currency for themselves. They could create quite a functioning economy for themselves using that. Because that's part of the problem with Spain losing Catalonia is, you know, they're part of the Eurozone, So they don't have a sovereign currency, and so tax revenue actually is important to them.
Yeah. Yeah, so like I think it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in the next few weeks. If it's anything like Iraqi Kurdistan, then I think it's unlikely we're going to find out anything more because the news just decides to stop covering all this stuff and the reporters move on to other parts of the world and we're left without that catharsis. So, yeah.
All right, so the next item, Mark Zuckerberg apologizes for showing off Facebook VR technology by leading a virtual tour through hurricane-devastated Puerto Rico.
Holy shit. Did he really do that?
Yeah, so this... Yeah, I mean, not only was it like a virtual tour, the Mark Zuckerberg thing that was leading the tour was like a fucking cartoon character. So it was like...
Oh my god.
It was as if they took cameras into Puerto Rico after the hurricane and then like did Roger Rabbit with it. It was fucking ridiculous.
Holy crap. Zuck, you need to learn how to PR. I recommend that you go and see Elon Musk. The man is a genius at it.
All right, the next one.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about the hole the size of Lake Superior. Or in some cases, I've read that it's the size of Maine. Or in some cases, I've heard that it's the size of Ireland. That has opened up in Antarctica. And... scientists are really worried because they have absolutely no idea what the cause is.
The cause is aliens or predators. I don't know which one because I didn't see that movie, but it's one of those two.
You see, I'm 100% convinced it's because of a Stargate because it's the Antarctic.
Well, that's even better.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
At least a Stargate we can use instead of it
killing itself. Look, I'm not sure if we have a zero-point energy... module in order to power a Stargate, but if we're starting to lose chunks of Antarctica...
I have one of those.
Oh, do you? Oh, great.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's in my closet somewhere. I can find it.
Yeah, cool. Well, before you make that public, if you could just send the plans my way, and...
No, I don't have plans. No, I just... It was just in there when I moved in.
Okay, well then, just some photos or something, and I'll see if I can reverse engineer it from there.
Okay.
Sweet.
I mean, it's just like a box, but yeah, the Vietnamese lady that lived here before, she left it here.
Nice. That's useful. Yeah. That's useful. And people say...
Nah, I don't really use it. You know, it's sitting behind my drum set. Doesn't really do anything.
Except, like, power a Stargate, obviously. Has it been...
Well, I don't have a Stargate, so...
Has it been
humming? What am I going to use it for?
Has it been humming?
Oh, I don't know.
You should check it. If it's been humming, then you might be responsible for the hole that has opened up in the Antarctic.
Okay.
Cool.
I'll do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right. So the next story. A house-sized asteroid passed over the Earth yesterday, giving scientists a chance to test early warning systems. My take is it actually hit us and we're all dead now.
I wonder if that wasn't maybe Nibiru, you know? Am I saying it right? Is it Nibiru?
Is that the...
The planet
X. No, I don't know
X.
if that is. Oh, okay. Yeah, it probably was.
I mean, for all we know, Planet X is fully populated by living creatures. They're just really tiny.
I mean, personally, I think what happened is that was the December 21st, 2012 apocalypse. The problem is that our calendars are not as accurate as the Mayans. So we're like 2 months and 5 years off.
Ah. It could also be that other guy. They were right. What was his name that did the most recent apocalypse warning? I can't remember.
John Titor. Jean Ray.
Yes.
No.
No.
It's definitely not Jean Ray.
the Christian psychic dude that predicted the world was going to
end. Oh, Joel Osteen.
No, not him.
All right, let's move on. So next up, we got top five strange theories of, you know, whatever period we're going to do this on. You want to start us off, since this is your section?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I wanted to talk about the one that I find the most fun is what they call the phantom time hypothesis. And it's a fringe theory in Russian mathematics. It was developed by Anatoly Fomenko. I don't know why I say that and sound Italian. It's really weird.
Anatoly Fomenko, hey! Gabagool!
It's essentially, I try to wrap my head around the whole concept, but I think I might have misunderstood things, because when I read it through the second time, I understood it differently. And then the third time, I understood it differently again. So, he takes the issue of time forgery to, like, logical extremes.
Now, can you talk about what time forgery is? Because I'd never heard of it before I read this.
Me either. Like, I'm still trying to wrap my head around the concept. So, according to Fomenko, Jesus Christ lived during the 15th and 16th century. Okay, so he's basically saying that, like, 1,100 years of human history have been made up thanks to the church in the 15th and 16th century. So,
sounds true to me.
So basically, we didn't go through the Dark Ages. It's just that the church made up the Dark Ages.
They made up a lot of stuff, so...
Yeah, look, they did. But
not totally far-fetched.
It's not that far-fetched, but I find it a little bit strange that we've got a lot of non-church evidence for this stuff, but there's still someone who's... I don't know how well he's been received, but yeah, it's crazy. It's out there. This led me on to another story about Jesus' tomb existing in Japan.
True.
And there's this Japanese, like, cult almost thing where Japan and the British are some of the lost tribes of Israel, and that the Japanese taught the Jews how to speak Hebrew.
Yeah. I mean, Hebrew is basically Japanese, so, you know, konnichiwa, lochaim, same thing.
So there's this entire cult of people that reckon that after ancient Israel collapsed and, you know, the society basically disintegrated, which I don't think it ever really did, like, as far as I know, there've been many, many wars there throughout human history, but I don't think that the society itself has ever disintegrated or whatever. But they reckon that some of the survivors traveled east and eventually settled in present-day areas of the Middle East, obviously, Central Europe, obviously, and South and Southeast Asia, which I can understand to a certain extent. But they reckon that some journeyed even further until they finally reached the Japanese islands, where they established the Shinto religion and the emperor system. And I'm not sure how well...
Pretty much the same as Judaism.
Yeah, it's almost exactly the same. You know, Shintoism, Judaism, and, like, how can you not see that they are intrinsically related? Okay, yeah, so that's two of the theories that I came across that I thought were absolutely nutsoid. Do you have any of them that you wanted to cover?
Yeah, I mean, I like that, the Lost Tribe one. I also like this beer started agriculture one. The idea is that hunter-gatherers were actually getting plenty of food, the reason that agriculture was started is because they needed grains to make alcohol. This one's completely true. I don't need to see any evidence in favor of it. It's just true.
It sounds true right off the bat. And I guarantee you, any pub in the world would have lots of people agreeing with you.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm pretty sure also that Mark Shepard, the restoration agriculture guy, who has like a grand theory of civilization based on the way that agriculture works, I'm pretty sure that he also subscribes to this theory. Because I remember reading in his book something about like grain-based agriculture existing basically for the reason that you can make alcohol with grain.
Wow.
So yeah.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. That's not even fringe science in my books. That sounds...
No, that's true science.
Yeah, yeah. Like that. I'm betting there's more empirical evidence for that than there is for genetically modified organisms being safe. another one that I found interesting was this theory that Muhammad, the Prophet Muhammad, never existed, which is very similar to the myth of the existence of Christ. It's something that I've had numerous debates, and I put that very, very liberally in inverted commas, in air quotes. I don't know what the purpose would be other than to unite all of Islam. But it is very similar to the Christ myth, in that essentially they're busy saying that it's a combination of the story of Moses and the story of Jesus, and combined together you suddenly get the story of Muhammad, and that he never really existed. Like I said, I don't really know what the purpose would be for the Muslim people to, or the heads of the Islamic religion to institute such a myth.
Power.
Especially when, if you actually go and read what he was like, it's not the kind of thing you actually want to make up. but it does remind me of... there's a biblical scholar out there, I can't remember his name, but he's very involved with the Christ myth, where he gave a very plausible reason for why the character of Jesus would have been created. And that was that in the 3rd and 4th centuries AD, the Jewish people living under the Roman Empire were becoming really difficult to handle. They wouldn't pay their taxes, they fomented rebellion all over the place, and that the Jewish people were waiting for their warrior Messiah to come and save them from oppression. And so in steps the Roman leaders of the time, and they developed the first ever psyops warfare, and they create the concept of the superhero Jesus, who turns the other cheek and renders unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and in this way managed to subvert enough of the Jewish people into this new Christian religion to thwart the open rebellion that was busy, that the Roman Empire was now facing. So it's an interesting theory. I'm not going to say that I endorse it in any way, but I find it very interesting. And in all honesty, it's
I'll endorse
as plausible
it.
As anything in the book itself.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really buy the idea that Jesus really existed. You know, people say there's ample historical evidence. I haven't looked at it very closely,
yeah.
But you know, people say there's ample historical evidence that Euclid existed, and Euclid obviously didn't exist. All the evidence for him is indirect textual references, and I have the feeling that the evidence for Jesus is like pretty much the same thing. You know, just people mentioning him, not necessarily when he was supposed to exist, but you know, hundreds of years after, as a lot of those historical figures have. I see plenty of reason why They would want to make up such a figure. You know, they would want to have some sort of figure that people would believe in as a religiously important figure in order to convert pagans or, you know, whatever the equivalent was in the Middle East in order to cement power for themselves. You know, I mean, there's ample evidence that the Christian church was basically state, and that it forged a ton of history and, you know, historical figures in order to forcibly convert people into supporting Christianity and putting them into a place of power, because they got plenty of wealth and other benefits from that. So it's not out of the question for me that that other people would do the same thing for Muhammad.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. And look, the only reason I'm not going out on a limb to endorse any of this stuff is because I'm not in the mood for any arguments with religious people who come and jump on our podcast and be like, oh my god, you are destroying my life.
I'm not in the mood for any arguments either. So don't argue with me. I'm just
everyone,
right.
Everyone, Ryan is totally up for this.
I'm always right about everything.
yeah, okay, and then just the last one. Might as well quickly cover it. There is a British scholar, I think he is, who is claiming that Phoenicians discovered America like 2,000 years before Christopher Columbus did. So,
now, to be clear, Christopher Columbus didn't discover America. So the Phoenicians couldn't have either. But let's rephrase it as the Phoenicians journeyed to America before Christopher Columbus did.
And
we already know there's lots of evidence that that the Vikings came here long before Columbus
did
as well.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah, the Vikings came here and the Native Americans basically, like, kicked their asses out.
Look, I think it's... I think all of this is at least remotely plausible. It's fringe theories. It's not necessarily... it's not necessarily true, but it's not necessarily false. There's a lot that we don't know, and there's a lot that we can't know. So, yeah.
But yeah, basically the thing with this Phoenician thing was it was made to seem plausible because some historian actually went and built a Phoenician ship replica and managed to sail around the, what you call it, of Africa, the Horn of Africa. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he's also planning to make a similar test journey across the Atlantic to see if it was possible to do that as well.
That should be interesting.
Hopefully he doesn't die.
Yeah, that would suck. But although these kind of missions are now done with, like, safety boats trailing. And
oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Kind of stuff. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
So there's a couple of things that we wanted to discuss that we haven't yet.
What do we miss?
Oh, we really need to talk about the Google Pixel phone.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Do you want to start us off on that?
Okay. So, Google's new Pixel phone has come out with a very interesting new feature. Basically, it has the ability to take photographs when it feels like it wants to or thinks it's appropriate. It's designed to take photographs whenever. And for the one and only time in my life, I will actually agree with Elon Musk, I think. He went on Twitter and he said, this doesn't even seem like a good idea. And I'm 100% on his side on that one. It's one thing to know that the NSA or whoever has the ability to tap into our technological devices and monitor their usage and our goings-on. That, you know, it's an idea we've sort of gotten a chance to get our heads around, and whether we like it or not, it's the state of the world, and we sort of...
at least we know the NSA's motivations, basically. Yeah. You know. But a computer, not so much.
A computer, not so much, and worse still, Google.
Yeah. So my thought is they're gonna... it's gonna take pictures of, weapon plans, where people are going to be in large numbers, you know, whether or not people think that robots should be enslaved. I think that's where they're going with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyone who speaks out against the robot overlords, you guys are in so much shit now.
Yeah, if you're not with the singularity, you're against it.
Okay, and related, although not directly, to this Google Pixel phone thing, is some researchers, where was it? I think it was in San Diego. Craig Fenter, who's a biologist, and I think a GM or CEO of Human Longevity, which is a San Diego-based company, who's supposed to be building the world's largest genomic database, has basically revealed that they are able to create a human face based on nothing but that person's genomes.
Not like an actual face, but like an image of someone's face.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
They can grow only the face. It's like Mission Impossible. They grow the face, and then they put it on, and then they go, like, rob a casino. I don't remember.
they're able to create a picture of a face, of anybody's face, based on nothing but their genome. And this becomes interesting, because now we're talking about... getting a scratch of DNA for a criminal investigation, running it through a genome database, linking up with the software, having a face produced, a picture of a face produced, and then linking it up with something like Google's Pixel phone technology, which they're already developing to work on iPhones and other Android devices. All of this put together leads to this slightly dystopian world where we're able to see people getting arrested very quickly for a crime that they might not actually be directly involved with, just because their DNA was found at a crime scene or whatever. And it reminds me of this TV show that I started watching with my wife. I saw the first episode, and it seemed mildly interesting. And it's all about this crowd-sourced crime-solving system.
You're talking about Person of Interest?
I don't know. Is that what it's called?
Yeah. I don't know what the show that you're talking about is called.
Person of Interest. Let me just double check.
I only know that one because my parents watch it, and they always try to get me to watch it.
No. This is a okay. New series.
Okay.
New series on crowd crime solving. Sorry, I have to know what it's called. Wisdom of the Crowd is the name of the new show. And basically, the premise of the show is that this multi-billionaire tech guru dude whose daughter was killed a year ago sells off most of his company in order to start up a new website where this...
Oh, yeah. And there was a bunch of news stories about this because it's semi-based on reality. Guy actually did that.
Yeah. So, now we take into account the fact that it's based on reality. There's already steps heading in that direction. And we can see stuff like Google's Pixel phones. We can see that forensic science could get involved in this. And it all starts to form this very... neat little picture where One of the issues they tackled in that very first episode that I saw was a guy that was misidentified through this website got attacked by a mob. And, you know, like, people aren't crime solvers. We're not capable of looking through large amounts of evidence and profiling people and figuring out how the dots connect. So we're very quickly able to, using mob mentality, go after the wrong people. And I can't help but wonder if the technologies that we're busy developing are actually assisting us in heading in that direction. Or
they're going to expose the conspiracy for the Kremlin to interfere in the election and make Hillary lose.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're just a Kremlin mouthpiece who's trying to sow doubt into the ability of amateur investigators to uncover the truth.
I thought
so get out of here.
I thought Twitter already did that. Oh god, the stuff on Twitter today, man.
That's the real wisdom of crowds,
yeah,
Twitter.
I read, and I was so disheartened after reading some stuff on Twitter today. Look, I was never going to vote for Bernie, even if I was American, because I don't like representative democracy. I prefer voting in local elections where the outcomes actually have something to do with my daily living. I get that national elections are a thing that happens and unfortunately lead to outcomes like the current US administration. But at the end of the day, my one vote isn't, I don't give a shit what anyone says, my one vote isn't making that big a difference. It takes collective action. It's an appeal to collectivism, which I like, but it's an appeal to collectivism for all the wrong reasons. I was never going to vote for Bernie, but anyone who tells me that Bernie is a bigger threat to society than Hillary,
they're objectively wrong because Hillary lost.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
literally, Hillary may have been able to beat Sanders, but she was never going to beat Trump. Sanders could have beaten Trump, but then obviously was stopped by Hillbots. So at the end of the day, I don't know. I kind of feel like Hillary's supporters have kind of made their bed and now they don't want to lie in it.
Oh no, they're terrible. So speaking of them and Twitter, I don't know if you saw this post, from yesterday. The Women's March organized a women's conference in, I think it was Detroit, and among the dozens and dozens of speakers that are going to be there, almost all of which are women, they also invited Bernie Sanders to speak on the first day of the conference. And so some article went up saying, like, Bernie is giving the opening speech for the women's conference. And the Hillaryite Twitter absolutely lost their fucking minds.
I did see. I know which tweet you're talking about. I saw it.
Yeah.
And
from Joy Reid. Yeah.
Yeah. The actual article says that Sanders is one of the most powerful politicians for women in U.S. politics today.
And he's the most popular politician in the country, so...
The very next...
Not surprising for him to be there.
Yeah, the very next...
It would be like having Obama there, like, you know, in 2008.
Yeah, how dare Obama talk on behalf of black people.
But they've lost their minds to the point where they're already organizing a competing event. Like, off the cuff... Someone created a new Twitter page, and it already has, like, thousands of followers. They're already trying to organize a competing event to deal with this travesty.
And that's the wisdom
women,
of the crowd.
Women organizing an event and choosing to have a man speak.
How dare
they? Don't like.
So, yeah, I just noticed that the very first reply to that tweet was, I don't know who it was, but whoever she was like, the most powerful, the most powerful. Do these people not know what the hell this man is? How is he the most powerful? And I kept going back up and reading again and again and again where it said, one of the most powerful. The article never says the most powerful.
Well, and they're screaming about, like, how Kirsten Gillibrand is the most powerful advocate for women who, like, first of all, if you read about her other politics, they're pretty bad. She wants to create a law to make boycotts illegal in order to, like, as a response to the BDS movement, to, you know, peacefully protest the treatment of Palestine by Israel. She is so pro-Israel, she wants to outlaw free speech in order to stop the BDS movement, which I think is a fucking terrible policy. But because she is vocally in support of reproductive rights, they're willing to just kind of overlook all that. Even though, you know, she's vocally in support of women's rights, but in actual accomplishment, she hasn't really done a whole lot.
Yeah. Except, of course, she is a woman. She is a woman, Ryan.
Right. So, like, that's the only important part.
Yeah, she has a vagina, and that's what matters, okay?
Right.
Like, don't lose sight of the fact, obviously, Jill Stein had a penis. So...
Well, she's the reason we have Trump. Also, Bernie Sanders
is the reason we have Trump. And Trump is the reason we have Trump, and Putin is the reason we have Trump, and... Uh-huh. Have I missed anything?
Syria. Travis Kalanick. Susan Sarandon. That's when they actually say Susan Sarandon is the reason. All those people who base their vote on what Susan Sarandon says.
Let's face it, Susan Sarandon is the most influential person in the history of U.S. politics. So
For sure.
So I guess I'm a little bit disappointed by Twitter. I've been trying to get into Twitter more, and the further I stick my, it's like, you know, when you go to test the water, you're about to get into the pool. You just dip that toe in, and it seems okay, because that first 5 mils of water in the top layer, that's actually been exposed to the sunlight, and it started to warm. But then the further you put your foot in, the more frigid the water becomes, and eventually you realize that if you were to dive head into this, your brain would probably freeze, your nuts would fall off, and you would be stuck with hypothermia and... possibly just drown. And I'm not...
Yeah, really... I'm done with social media, I think. My goal for 2018 is just to be off of it, except for, like, pages that I run. Facebook sucks. It's boring.
Yeah.
Twitter sucks. It's full of scolds.
Like,
it's not even as funny as when I started, like, you know, 2 months ago or whatever. 2 months ago, you know, I was getting a lot of laughs out of it and everything, so it seemed pretty fun. But now it's just like fucking people just yelling at each other and doing dog piles. Like, yesterday, there was this big fiasco because, some of the boys from Chapo Trap House, posted that they took a picture next to the Bill Cosby star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And they made some, badly constructed joke about, it was like, oh, try taking this statue down, libs, or something like that. Like, basically saying, why is this star still here? And, you know, Twitter had a meltdown over it. Everyone was, you know, dogpiling them, saying, like, your career should be over now because of some shitty offhand joke. Like, for me, the worst part about that, besides, I mean, the timing's bad, obviously, because there's this Harvey Weinstein thing happening. So maybe not the greatest time to make rape jokes. But for me, the worst part about it was that it was just a shitty joke. It wasn't funny.
Yeah, this is it. Is like, it's one of the things. As you know, at the moment, my work is doing social media for small businesses. And part of my daily routine involves going on to every single social media platform that is even remotely possible. Popular. And just, like, I have to scroll and scroll and scroll through endless amounts of drivel. We are spent, as a society, we are spending so much energy on nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, last weekend I went off social media pretty much the whole weekend. I think I was on for maybe, like, 5 to 10 minutes total. And it was a 3-day weekend, so it was quite a long time. And, you know, I guess I'll include Friday in this too. So 4 days, maybe 5 to 10 minutes total on social media. I'm not counting messaging Peter because we were trying to organize the show. But man, I had so much fucking free time. It was insane. I told you, I spent like almost an hour in Home Depot just like looking at drill bits.
When you told me about that, I wasn't sure if you were trying, if that was like a silent call for help. Like,
I mean, in
I
a
feel
sense,
so
yeah.
Lost with my life. I was standing there just staring at drill bits.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel lost because I spent so much time on social media. That like,
without it,
if I'm off
void.
Of it, it's just like, wow, what do I do with all this extra time I have? I just don't even know. So I'm going to try and continue doing that. And
okay, so what I recommend...
actually getting shit done.
What I recommend is that you read a fiction book of some kind. Anything fiction.
I have so many nonfiction books to read, though. no, there is one book that Professor Knitson recommended to me that I do want to get to at some point. I started it, I got like 10 pages in and was like, I don't really read fiction books. It's kind of stopped.
And this is why.
Yeah. But yeah, social media sucks now. One other point I wanted to make about Twitter being a bunch of scolds was like, I mean, in a sense, it's like a public forum. In that everybody can see everyone else's tweets. You know, there's not like groups like there is in Facebook where you can actually like create a closed cloister for yourself. But it's like, you know, if you know someone makes problematic jokes, then and you have a problem with that, don't follow them.
Yeah, like how
hard is
it? And
Don't go out of your way to yell at them because they make jokes that offend you because. There's not many jokes that are actually funny that are not going to offend some person. You know, I listen to a lot of comedy podcasts, and there's a lot of stuff they say that are, like, basically personally attacking people that are, you know, like me or, like, friends of mine. But in the end, they're jokes, and
yeah, man,
you can choose to go listen to them or not to listen to them. And, you know... Sure, you can, like, go ahead and say that if you're, like, a follower of them and you're offended by a joke, you can say that. But don't, like, try and create a dog pile of, like, everyone, like, your thousands of followers, like, going and yelling at them. You know, don't try to end someone's career because of some, like, part of a stream of consciousness because, you know, Twitter is a stream of consciousness. People just post shit and forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like looking back at tweets from, like, 2012. Like, people's ideas change. They have changed since then, obviously. You know, if you let someone know, like, hey, maybe it's not a good time to make a rape joke, then if, you know, as long as they respond and say, like, oh, yeah, you're right, and they delete the tweet, then, like, the problem is gone unless they keep repeating it, you know? Like, if the tweet is gone... then why are you continuing to bring it back up? Yeah. Like, you shouldn't say this. Okay, I won't. Delete. And then, like, continuing to pile on. I don't understand the rationale behind doing that. It's so fucked up. And it makes Twitter unfun. It kind of makes comedy shitty because, you know, you have to, like, walk on eggshells in order to, like, make jokes, which is kind of difficult because on the internet, on a site with hundreds of millions of users, there's always going to be someone who's going to get offended by something.
Agreed.
And someone like them, you know, they got popular by offending centrists, basically.
Yep.
Like, they made jokes that were offensive to centrists, and that's where they got their popularity. And so, like, of course their jokes are going to offend people. That's, like, their brand. But, I don't know. I'm not going to cape too much for them, because it was a shitty joke. It was poorly timed, and, yeah.
Yeah, look, I run a Facebook group specifically dedicated to music, science, and stuff. And the whole point of the group is that no politics. You know, you're not allowed to discuss politics in there. It's a very easygoing group. There's hundreds of groups throughout Facebook specifically dedicated towards politics and political debate and stuff. So we try and keep it as light as possible. And in the last 3 weeks or so, there's been 4 or 5 threads that have been started regarding flat earth conspiracy theorists. And it's been interesting. But one of the things that I found in these little chats that have happened has been there was a good article explaining why the last few years have seen a rise in the flat earth movement. And one of the points that they make is that it's so easy now to create a professional looking website, to populate it with ideas that seem at the surface to be quite plausible. And people aren't that educated. Like, although people have a basic education, they don't necessarily have an understanding that allows them to critically appraise everything that they see. So it's...
They're sheeple.
Yeah, it's not that far-fetched to have... biases that people can feed on. You know, a lot of people are legitimately concerned about genetically modified organisms and their effect on not just human health but ecological health, because there's a big profit motive involved with it. And because that sort of lends them towards mistrusting the science behind things, they are, as laymen, also then susceptible to having that anti-science bias exploited by flat earth scientists, flat earth theorists. And especially when schools will teach the kids to go and look out for dodgy looking websites, and then here they come and they find a clean, neat website, well articulated. And it's not that difficult to do. And another point that they made was that all of this stuff gets so much attention in the media. The top news sites now have these systems in place where they keep an eye on what all the other news sites are covering. And the moment that something gets some traction with one news site, it's guaranteed to get traction with all the other news sites. And so one story will be populated across 100 different news sites. It will gain viewership in the tens of thousands within the first few minutes. And in this way, people that are not actually having their ideas endorsed are getting their names spoken all over the fucking planet. Things go viral in a matter of minutes. There's no time to think and critically appraise everything that we're going through. It takes several hours for rebuttal pieces to be written in. And in that time, the damage has been done. So, there's this problem.
They should just respond with articles that are just like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
That would almost be more effective.
Done. Shut the fuck up. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we're running pretty long. We're at about 90 minutes now.
Okay.
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah. So, I think we've said enough for today. We've kept it nice and relaxed. We've covered some interesting topics, some fun topics. We've had a laugh or two, and I think we can call it a day. I want to go for a nap now. So, yeah.
So our next episode is most likely going to be about existential threats. We're going to try and keep it light, even though it's kind of a heavy subject.
Yeah. I don't want to depress anyone and like, increase Xanax's sales or anything.
Yeah. The outro song is going to be from former coworker of mine, Emily Woods, a.k.a. Drip Kiss.
Woohoo! So since we recorded, she released a new song called Pre-K, so I'm going to go ahead and play that one.
Cool. See you guys later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In the graveyard, babe, I like to play. I poke a face to stage. I roll the dice and play. Guys, roll the dice and play. God, be nice when you play. God, be nice when you play. I don't do this little bitch. You ever did me? You wonder why you scoop me in the middle of the street. Order five drinks, only charge me for two. And I got some high cheeks, don't run my credit through. And I got some tight links, gonna hook it up too. To link up with you and boom, throw the dynamite in there, throw the appetite. I'm doing overnight work, blowing till it's right. Selling mama's gold at the pawn shop, yelling at me, oh, cause I talk a lot. I stay this way since the pre-K. I gon' survive off the prepaid. Selling mama's gold at the pawn shop. Yelling at me, oh, cause I talk a lot. I stay this way since the pre-K. I can survive off the pre-K. Bubble baby, trust me, maybe. Lick your skin till you're shaky. You hate me, you can't try to save me. I'm two shades of shady. I'm sleeping in church and the priest try to wake me. My parents never call my phone, it's okay. And I don't need a phone to get through the day. I put it in a bucket and draw like no more. And I put it away like the liquor store. Selling mama's gold at the pawn shop. Yelling at me, oh, cause I talk a lot. I stay this way since the pre-K. I gon' survive off the prepaid. Yelling mama's gold at the pawn shop. Yelling at me, oh, cause I talk a lot. I stay this way since the pre-K. I can survive off the prepaid. Selling mama's gold at the pawn shop. Yelling at me, oh, cause I talk a lot. I stay this way since the pre-K. I gon' survive off the prepaid. Selling mama's gold at the pawn shop. Yelling at me, oh, cause I talk a lot. I stay this way since the pre-K. I can survive off the pre-K.